I am unashamed. What about you?
Put your headphones on.
Yeah, because we can't hear you. And look, you got to remember when you... Because that way you can hear yourself. Because you're way too far away from the mic. Just FYI. This is fun for our viewers. This is how the sausage is being made.
Well, I never like to cut that part because I want people to know this is just like an ever transforming.
Like we've entered the 1800s, Al, and we're like, okay, this is a microphone. These are earphones. This is being broadcast in virtual reality. It feels just like, do what?
Well, Dad's always like, Dad, for years. I've always, my line for you when I'm out speaking and stuff is my dad was born 100 years too late. Like, you actually probably would, I mean, you're a pretty big deal, I guess, for this last century, but there's no telling what they'd be talking about you if you'd have been born 100 years before you were.
Yeah.
In 1846.
Yeah. There's more than one day I feel like I'm in a time warp.
Yeah. Well, see, that's why when I metal detect, I'm literally going back in time. So me and Murray, my buddy who got me into metal detecting, who's your age, who, by the way, was one of the inventors of the Mojo.
Yeah, the spinning decoy
about him before. Who knows everybody who's a farmer because he likes to metal detect.
So was he, because you first met, was he a non-Christian and then came to Christ? Or was
who's
he
that?
Murray Crowe?
Yeah, we told that story on the podcast. Yeah. I shared Jesus with his daughter.
Okay, that's right.
Brought her to the Lord. His mom, her mom was a believer, and then Murray was like, I don't want to have anything to do with it. But through the years, he met you, and he came to the Lord. Hey, he's one of my best friends. I love you.
Oh, I love him. He's one of my favorite. And he's been my biggest fan for my preaching.
He was diagnosed with cancer, and he's just had a real tough battle. But I'm going to tell you, that joker, when we went out there Saturday, it's 95 degrees. We're in a bean field where a town used to be, and it's just fields. And he had hunted that area before, but he's always been a Civil War buff. And I'm like, look, okay. I went once with him on that.
Yeah.
Found a few bullets and some
buttons off a
coat. Yeah, but I'm like, you know, okay. Let's find some coins. Let's find some silver, man. And I kept preaching to him about that Luke 15. I mean, it's biblical. You know what I mean? We're sweeping the house and finding the lost coin
lost
and
coins.
Rejoice. It brings joy. I mean, let's do this. So I finally talked him in to start going to that. The people like him, they don't like hunting old towns because they call it trash. You're going through, just imagine a whole town being devastated and plowed under, and then you run a metal detector on top of it. There's more sounds going on in your head. But every once in a while, you get your settings right, and you find a little round silver coin, and it just bleep, 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 bleep. It's like singing clear music, and you stop everything.
So I'll play the role of Dad on this one for vacation. When do you get to the – what's the fun part of that?
Here's the fun part.
You're sweating, you're grueling, you're running across, your sounds in your head. I can't even hardly sit on the porch right now.
I clean up all the stuff that I find that are interesting, and they may not be valuable.
So that's
but look at all
he
that
does
stuff.
It all for that, Dad.
You see all that stuff?
Yeah, you need
we'll
a little,
show this picture to you guys
need
watching.
A little –
magnifying glass.
Signage. No, you need a little signage. This is where you end up when you run out of something new.
So look, here's the funny part.
With all your little stuff, it's like one of my grandsons that's like found a bunch of crap.
Everything
at the beach.
Meticulously spaced out. I mean, you know, you're like, yeah, okay.
All right. Thank you, Phil. That was encouraging. So look, my buddy Murray finds an 1805 Spanish Real, I think that's what it's called, when Spain was here.
Yeah, because
Spain.
Spanish flag flew over Louisiana at some point.
And we found a coin. Somebody dropped
it. They came right before the French.
Right, right, right.
And I found my prize of the day was an 1850 half dime, which he found an 1856 half dime. I mean, look, if we find one thing like this in three
trips.
So
why did they call it a half dime?
You know,
and not a nickel?
because the nickel wasn't here yet.
When did the nickel come in?
The nickel came in like 1860, I'm going to say three. I'm sure I got that wrong, but it's somewhere in the 18.
Somebody will correct you this.
Well, I mean, off the top of my head. I mean, I think it's 1860s where the nickel started, and then they started making it out of mainly terrible material because they don't hold up well. But I found a buffalo nickel.
So 5 cents was originally a half dime in coinage for the U.S.
That's right.
Okay, I got you.
And so I found a buffalo nickel Saturday. It was 1934, I think. Of course,
Didn't they get it down to the Jason and figured out, you know, the 3 cent piece?
I found it. That was at my plantation that I.
I wondered about that, but then it occurred to me a penny would go and a dime would really go way further than it would now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, it was.
Oh, Phil. Oh, yeah. This was a lot of money.
20 or 30 cents in your pocket.
You would have been, if somebody had just had what you found.
Yeah. Of course, now they're down, you know, they're worth a few hundred dollars, I guess, that half dime. I mean, it's in spectacular condition. And but here's what's funny. And then Murray found an 1856 real dime. It has the eagle on the back. I forgot. Because they're all, you know, they would make them and call them this and that. There's different variations. And this thing was spectacular looking. You see all that stuff I found.
Jep was in town.
But he's a rookie. He's only been doing it for just a little bit. And there was so much trash out there.
Jep is still looking in the change areas of mom's vehicle. He was in my truck rooting around.
Yeah,
he's still looking for stuff in the truck. I'm like, all you're going to find is just my loose chains.
He doesn't understand. Well, he's thinking, he's trying to find these rare
coins. He wants to just lay it out for him on the ground, you know, like somebody coming on dropping, you know, 1850 stuff.
Thus the term Ricky. So look, we all day out there, and Jelp finds one musket ball, which is cool.
So you got your whole blanket full of trinkets.
He has one musket ball and a bunch of nails and rebar. And just, he kept, I went over there one time. He had a 4 foot hole.
That doesn't even surprise me.
Look, he has a 4 foot hole. I said, Jeff, what are you doing? He said, well, Murray thinks this may be a brain cramp. The end of the rifle with the
spear. Bayonet?
Bayonet. He's like, Murray, I was like, that's not a bayonet. That. I don't know what that is, but you're gonna need a bigger shovel. That's why Jep found one musket ball
because he
spent an hour
digging a 4 foot hole.
Yeah, digging up some piece of metal that had something that looked like a spear on the end up, but it wasn't. It was just a big hunk of metal. I was like, Jep, you need to, you know, rework your settings. You know what I found interesting is the farmer pulled up, who's given Murray the permission, and he was 87, and look, everything they tell you to do to live long, it was obviously he had not done that. He was a huge guy,
but he made it to 87.
He's 87 walking around in 95 degree weather.
He overweight.
Yeah. And one of the nicest people you ever going to meet.
And I'm sure he's eating good every day. Like, he's eating stuff out of his garden and slaughtering pigs.
Funny guy. He was like, he said, I don't know why y'all come out here. That's the first thing he said. I don't know why y'all come out here, Murray. Murray's like, we had already found two or three silver coins. I was thinking, well, I know why we come out here, you know. And he said, I've hunted this thing 100 times. He said, there's been more people out here, you know. And Murray's like, well, look what we found. He was looking like, you found that out here? So, yep. And Murray's like, well, I'm sorry, we didn't mean to find your treasure. He said, oh, I quit this. And Murray said, well, what'd you quit it for? He said, well, one day I bent down and I couldn't get back up. And I thought, well, that's all of this.
Time to shut her down.
And he said, I left that metal detector right there. And he said, I've never been back. He said, y'all probably find it out here at some point.
You'll probably find it up underneath.
He said,
come looks like a Jep will dig a hole looking for it.
He said, come look at my gun I just bought. So we walked over his truck. I thought he was going to show me a gun. It was just some pieces of metal. And I said, what is it? He said, it's a do-it-yourself. It was a 410 that you put together. It was just three or four pieces of metal. I said, well, where's the trigger? He's like, you pump it and you shoot it. I said, "Well, you look like you got plenty of money. Why didn't you just buy one and you just pull the trigger?" He said, "Well, that's no fun."
I guess that's what
happened.
So then
I gave him a duck call. I said, "Well, let me give you a duck call for letting." He said, I don't want one. And I was like, "You're the first man I've ever offered a duck call." I was like, "It makes a party favorite." He said, "No, I just, you know, I eat chickens." I said, "Okay, well, let me just give it to you, and you give it to one of your grandkids." But he was a marvelous, marvelous fella.
That's pretty awesome.
Anyway, that's what we did. Well, Phil, I want to hear about this this project. The water came up. And I don't like this plan that I heard. This is the first time we're discussing this, because I heard from the middleman, which is Jay, which is your son-in-law. He said, "Phil's thinking about doing something really crazy," because the water came up, and it was up for months, and then it goes down. But you look out there, because we're going to plant our duck hole, but the water's not leaving. And so there's a problem that has occurred. I'll let you describe the problem.
Well, when you have a levee system and a way to drain your duck water, we drained the duck water so it won't kill all the oak trees. Put it on it artificially. We pump it up, and a month before duck season, we start pumping. When we get it at the right depth, we shut down the pump, and we just wait on the rains. Well, that's what we did last year when duck season started last November. Well, about duck season started in November and December and January, and we were still basically, it was not too deep at the last of duck season, which was the last of January. Well, in February, the river began to rise. It backs in there. What we pumped up, the backwater comes. It's been four in a row, and the river rises each year. The last 4 years has risen from 21.2 to 47.5 this year.
And 40 is flood stage.
40 is flood stage, but just think about it: a river going
and 50
from,
is
in the we're house.
We're on the levee. We're on the news.
Yeah, basically just under 30 feet straight up.
Right.
Well, you can imagine all your levee systems and all your pipes and all of your everything, except the floating duck blind, water's way, way over them. Well, you wait till all that water begins to fall out. Well, when it fell out, it got down on the top of the levees, and when it come off the top of the levees, I go down there and make sure that water in that 48-inch pipe, water is flowing out. We get it in the winter. We take it out in the spring and the midsummer. However long it stays, the backwater, but the backwater started falling out.
So, Dad, hold on 1 second. So, I want to take a break. So, when you're running a business, human resources can be tough, because obviously you got all these lawsuits, you got everything going on kind of in our American culture in 2020.
Humans are difficult.
And so we have to figure out a way to manage that, right? So most companies and corporations have a human resources department. They're taking care of all these things, but it's very expensive. You know, you're talking about whatever you'd have to pay to hire somebody. So small businesses, you know, they suffer and have a tough time with this. So there's a company that has provided something really good that can help you guys. You got a small business. You need to have some things for your employees, but you're not exactly sure where to go. The name of the company is Bambee, B-A-M-B-E-E. And so basically, they provide a dedicated HR manager. They can craft your policy, maintain compliance, all that. It's $99 a month. So instead of paying a salary, it's very affordable. And basically you can get to them by phone, email, or real-time chat, which is these day and age is really good. So month-to-month, no hidden fees, cancel anytime. Go to Bambee.com, Bambee.com/Robertson. You get a free audit and find out if these guys can help you. And I also want to mention, as you finish your story, that if this kind of stuff really interests you, you need to subscribe on Blaze TV/Unashamed to Dad's show In the Woods with Phil, because we chronicle everything you're talking about. Dad literally takes you through the process, and we have shows about it. So if you're interested in that, check it out. Go ahead, Dad.
You know, we have one pipe over right now on the dog, we call it. It's a little lake. We pump it up every year. We got it down to where it should be going through a riser that's tied onto a 36-inch pipe. Every time we tear, the beavers don't want that water to go out of there. They want to keep it in there. I got to take it out of there so I can plant duck food and all that, you know. Well, I got it down to where it was inside the tree line, and we'll tear the beaver dam out today. When we go back the next morning, it's like we never touched it. They've put it all back. No draining. We tear it out. It drains in the daytime. They pack it full.
So they're working all night.
All night. And by the time they get done, it's like you never touched it. We're talking,
it's amazing.
We're talking tons of earth.
Yeah.
Well, I get down there on the other side, on the when they dropped off the levee. There, it's a 48-inch pipe, and we got a plate that just slides down. I raised that plate up when I saw the backwater coming. I said, well, no use in trying to there's no factor.
Well, you didn't want to create the pressure.
That's right. So I just raised my plate up and let the backwater 48-inch pipe just blow it in there. Well, it got up, you know, 20 feet deep over that spot. Well, I finally see it somewhere between it going through there. They didn't do it then, but when that river got up at its height and when it started falling out, at some point, the beavers got together and said, we've got to stop up that pipe. So they literally,
they actually had a meeting?
Yeah, they had a meeting. I took a pole.
Phil says they have a demon.
And I reached down there and I jugged that pole up in that pipe, but it didn't go in the pipe. It was just a wall of mud and sticks.
Well, a four-foot pipe.
Think about it. You got a 48-inch pipe like this, you know, 48 inches. And it's packed full of mud on the front end and logs, and no water is going through there. Well, now the problem is, you say you have to get that water out of there.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is, if you go out there and start tearing at that hole, when that beaver dam, because of the pressure on it, see, the water on the downside is falling out. The water here is way up high.
So you've got a projectile is what you...
You've got the mother of all commode flushes. This is like... Oh. So if you're the man there with a rake and you're reaching up in there, that thing busts loose.
You're gone.
You probably would live, but you're going to go 30 feet through that culvert at a rapid rate of speed, and it's a wild ride before you pop up down on the other end. You could probably survive it, but... I don't want to go through that pipe at 15 miles an hour.
Jay was telling me this story. I was like, because he's like, we got a problem. I mean, you got to talk to Phil. And he's telling me everything you just said.
Stone, I'm training him to know what to do when the water is up.
Well, he's calling me and saying, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
I said, well, what about dynamite? And he said, well, you don't want to tear up your pipe.
Yeah. Well, you said the word while ago, rookie. So I'm teaching them about water. What we're going to do is we're going to take a track hole, pull up on the levee where the pipe is. Look, cut a 20-foot long bitter pecan tree, a tree about like this at the butt. Down there where the limbs come out of it, up there, you know, you got to get the right kind of tree, the limb coming out right. Well, you take one with the limbs about 1.5 inches to 2 inches, where those limbs start out, you cut that tree off, and you leave you a prong on the end of that pole. The prong will be a limb here,
This is real life.
Yeah.
Only on our show would anybody be thinking this.
You have a pole, a log, a fair-sized tree with a prong on the end of it.
Okay.
Hook your track hole to the butt end. Here's your hole. I get that prong stuck up in there. He takes the backhoe, and when he pulls that blade forward, it tears that mud and them sticks out of there on the top of that mud.
It's a roto-rooter.
That's the plan. And Jay said, what do you think about that? I said, I think someone's going to get hurt. You better have a really skilled track hoe operator.
Jimmy Red.
Oh.
And I think...
Local redneck.
No matter what happens...
Boy, this plan just got more dangerous.
The third thing is, no matter what happens, you must film this.
Oh, yeah.
This is must.
This will be filmed for In the Woods with Phil. This has to, because there's going to be something
it's
epic.
It's a pretty good project,
I don't have a better plan.
Well,
but
what I heard the original plan was, before this was hatched, was Dad told Jay, he said, yeah, Stone, you can just swim out there with this thing you're building and start in on it. He said, but you'll have to get out. when the thing breaks.
It's too dangerous to have a man doing it, because if a man doing it, that all that mud gives way.
Well, didn't this happen before to Dan on the other side of the pipe one time where the projectile just blew past him?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I've been just, blown off my feet before.
Sometimes the plugs of mud and stuff are like 10 foot around. It's just mud and logs. And we have juked them with, me and Dan got on there, we'd run the pole. We were in the water. We were running, and kept gouging by hand that log. When it finally gave way, when I saw what happened, that plug came out. I said, the mother of all commode places, this is like about a 10-foot long, this big around of mud and stick, just projectile going out the end. Water is powerful.
Because you can't just get a backhoe because it's up in the pipe?
Up in the pipe. You can't get up in there, except with a pole. We're going to have a pole there.
You're doing this, I can tell.
Oh, it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's in the morning.
So I want to know from
you
our
wonder
list,
what I do. I'm done.
Is anybody else in the world going to be doing what Dad is doing?
You'll have
tomorrow?
To remember, you get on the black box and you hire you an engineering firm to figure this out, or you use redneck ingenuity and get out there and say, I think what we'll do is tie a large pole with some prongs on the end and get a track hoe down there and tie onto that and just pull that forward. That pole is going to go.
Like
it's going to tear out. Whatever,
I like
in front
the
of
fact
it.
that you've planned out the cutting of the tree, the size, the looking of the prong. I mean, this thing is like
I'm driving through the woods, leaving there after
looking
looked
for
at
the tree,
problem.
Right?
And I'm looking on my right and on my left, and I see a tree, and I back up. I said, Stone, see that tree right there? And I pointed over at
you.
Because
you got to be long and straight, right?
Yep, as an arrow.
I'm buying the plan. This was
killing
me.
I see the limbs coming off of it. I said, that's about a 15-footer. I said, I think there's our tree. So I'm gonna, and I wanted one as close as I could get to the pipe, because a tree that long is heavy.
Yeah.
So I got to have a trailer. So we're going to get the track home.
You got to have a trailer.
You're basically taking a big toothpick for a dam and just.
That's right. And then you're plunging it.
I told Jay,
it's a rotor.
I was like, this sounds like an idea.
It's a rotor-rooter type deal.
Right, right. It sounds like an idea that Phil had after he was eating a steak and he had his toothpick and thought, need to get a tree and
but
just
all I
grab
can,
it with
all
a
all I can tell y'all, the reason I know it'll work is I've done it before. I've done
Have you
this
done
before.
It with the track hoe, too? Or just,
yeah, I've done it with the track hoe. Oh. I've done the whole thing.
Whiz, where was I at?
This will work.
Oh, man. So the question is, Jay's, will all this, one of these days, and hopefully it's not for a long, long time, but dear old Dad will be in heaven waiting on us to get there. And is he going to be able to pass this on to the next generation? Because I don't know. I wouldn't instantly think of that. I would be, I don't know.
Everybody
wouldn't come up
with that. People who hunt old corns on the ground. They don't participate in this kind of stuff, because what we're doing here is, this is mission critical. Finding old coins is not mission critical. It's just, I've run out of something to do. Let's walk around. I got plenty of money in my pocket.
I think everybody has their personalities. And look, mine, I've said this before on this very podcast, which is very frustrating to my wife. I'm terrible at fixing things. I'm great at destroying them. So what I would do is I would blow it up, and I would buy another pipe.
Yeah.
That's just what I would do. Yeah. I would blow the whole thing and start over, and I'd get somebody
if
else.
If you'll pay for half the pipe, 48-inch pipe, 30 feet long, is a pretty expensive piece of pipe.
That's a lot.
But you're missing something. What you're paying for is you get to witness the explosion. You see what I mean?
Does that give you a thrill to watch something blow up?
That's Duck Dynasty type crap.
But that's priceless.
It's not real, ladies and gentlemen.
But Phil, I like seeing the explosions. Goodness. I mean,
so what we just witnessed. Well, let's take a break. So Father's Day is coming up soon. So Dad, happy Father's Day in advance. I'm sure we'll tell you. I know you're big on knowing all the holidays. We're always thinking.
I saw somewhere where Father's Day is like ranked 20th out of like.
Oh, and I bet Mother's Day is high.
Oh,
everybody loves the mom.
I think it's like second. You got Christmas and Mother's Day, you know.
What is it about that? You know,
I don't know. I mean, there's like things you've never heard of that are better than Father's Day or more celebrated. I'm like, what happened here?
So dad is hard to buy for because dad doesn't do much and need much. I mean, you're pretty low maintenance in terms of, and you don't really, you're not into gifts much. And, you know, every once in a while we'll get him a gun or something, but you know, how many of those do you need? So I found a good gift for you, dad. So
I'm really on the edge of my seat here.
So this is a good one. And this is because I love this product. So this is one of our new sponsors just recently, Tommy John.
Oh,
Tommy John makes the most comfortable underwear that you can ever imagine. Cause, and I know you need an upgrade because I've seen what you're still back. You're still going back from the where you were when you were
maybe in the 60s,
6 years
old. 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's tidy.
Yeah, it's time for an upgrade. Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's the most softest, breathable fabric ever. I've been wearing them for a long time, so I love this product. So if you get your order before June 17th, that'll ensure that you can get it for fathers. I'm telling you, try this. Your dad is going to love you if you get this to him. In fact, they're so confident in their underwear. If you don't love your first pair, you get a full refund with their best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. That's how much they stand behind these.
I don't want to be filmed wearing them.
Okay.
Well,
we don't want them.
None of us want that either.
Just saying, I've seen some of their advertisement. I said, I'd rather just.
You've seen the ads before with the other. Yeah, you don't want to do that.
We're going to talk about it, Phil, but we're not going to model.
Okay.
Our model. Nobody's ever come to us and said, would you model this for me? No.
I'll try them on if no one's looking, you know, like, okay.
Now, they'll come to my wife and ask her to mop, but me, no.
I don't care how they look. But he made a little statement. They're comfortable.
They are.
Well, very that's what he said.
All right. So
I'm like, yeah.
Here's what you do. You go to TommyJohn.com/Phil. TommyJohn.com/Phil. You get 25% off your first order. It's pretty good. Say 25%. Check them out. Go to their website and get some comfortable underwear for your dad. I'm going to get you some, Dad, but we don't want to see it.
No, you'll never see me in them.
So what we just witnessed on the Unashamed podcast, I guess is why our podcast is so popular, because you know all this crap we've been having to watch on TV every day, which is just, if you're watching it, is misery. And that's the hardest I've laughed since, I guess, 2 weeks, just thinking about that one story.
So, I heard the story last night. I was like, I was hearing it from Jay.
Well,
I was like, I mean,
I was,
because he was like, you might already go talk to Phil. And he went to the
Jay was a little worried he's going to be a projectile. You don't want to follow the plug, that's for sure.
Well, I don't want to be any, I mean, you start swinging a tree.
That's right.
You know, around.
I would never, under any circumstances, and I want to stress this, under any circumstances, I would never, ever walk down the street of a city with a sign over my head, showing with some kind of sign. I'm never going to do that, ever.
So I'm glad.
No matter how bad it is or what happened.
It's not your thing.
I'm not going to do that, ever. Yeah.
I never have, so I don't know that I'd say I never.
Well, I think with this podcast, you know, one of the things that happened this weekend was Al preached, and I called you, and I was like, Al, of all the sermons I've heard you give, and you preach for 20-something years, I thought that was numero uno.
It was very, very well.
Yeah, well done. But so, it goes to the point, the reason you wouldn't do that, Phil, is because in Jesus, you have something that penetrates the heart. I mean, you think about what the gospel message does, and I don't mean that just as a phrase. I'm like, who Jesus is. It makes people pause because he addresses all the mistakes people make, which here we have a mistake that was made, and there's been tons of them.
Right.
And we have injustice that's occurring. And then on the fringe, you have people who are responding improperly,
right,
with the same degrading of other human beings.
Yep.
So you have more mistakes. Well, here you have Jesus who has an answer for all mistakes, and then he kicks it up a notch and has an answer for our number one problem in life, which is death, which is what occurred that started all this in this moment. And so that's why we tend to not say, well, I'm going to go protest. We think, well, we need to keep sharing Jesus with people because I know that shares, I mean, that changes the heart.
And right? And look, and the Apostle Paul, in other words, we have it much easier, although we're persecuted all the time. We put no stumbling block in anyone's path so that our ministry will not be discredited. That's why I said I'm not going down the road with some kind of sign or some cause. Rather, as servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way. Now, what's this list? Here's the Apostle Paul, what he was up against. This is 2 Corinthians 6. In great endurance and troubles, hardships and distresses, in beatings, imprisonments, and riots, in hard work, sleepless nights, hunger, impurity, understanding, patience, and kindness. Look how good a people good a person he was, and the people with him, in the Holy Spirit, in sincere love, in truthful speech, and in the power of God, with weapons of righteousness in the right hand and the left. He's got the word of God. Through glory and dishonor, bad report and good report, genuine yet regarded as impostors, known yet regarded as unknown, dying yet we live on, beaten yet not killed, sorrowful yet always rejoicing, poor yet making many rich, having nothing and yet possessing everything. Well, now that's a guy, all he wanted was for people to come to a knowledge of the truth about Jesus, his death for the sins of the world, his burial and resurrection, eternity, immortality. Come on. He's trying to convince them. And look at that list of things that was happening to him. Because of that, each day has enough trouble of its own without me getting in the mix and causing. I'm not going to get on the street with a sign and protest anything.
Right.
I'm going to fear God and do what's right. I'm going to point people to Jesus. And if I take a cursing, a beating, a well, all that, you say, you just have to suck it up and keep going.
So
that's my view of it.
So we talked about on a previous podcast kind of what's going on, obviously, in the country, and it's still ongoing. And so we talked a lot about that. What my sermon did, I think that kind of was some things that have happened since, and I just want to set the context for us, then I want you guys to weigh in, is in John 6, which we've talked about as well, 1 through 15, was when Jesus had the big fish fry, is what I call it. But, you know, he provided the fish and all that bread, and he had 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, and he miraculously fed at least 5,000 people.
Yep.
You know, and we imagine what that looked like. Was he, you know, Smith, you say he was tearing the bread apart when the bread's falling down, and that was the 12 baskets full of just what they picked up. You know, he's literally creating. And so I made the point that we know that one of the fundamental truths from a human perspective and law is that matter cannot be created or destroyed.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's been—
Unless you're God.
Unless you're the creator. And so here he is. He's creating out of 5 loaves of bread on the spot enough bread to feed 5,000 at least people. And he's distributing that. 2 fish, 2 little fish, or I don't know how big they were, and he fed them all fish at the same time. So as this is happening, and you know, he's doing this to show who he is. But what's interesting, I think what advances the story, is the last point I got to, which to me was really interesting, is that so they just witnessed this. They just had their bellies full. And here's what happened. After the people, this is verse 14, John 6. After the people saw the sign Jesus performed, he just fed them, they began to say, surely this is the prophet who is to come into the world. So they're like, well, this has got to be him. I mean, he just fed us.
He fed us from thin air.
From thin air. And because, you know, I don't know what they knew about what he had, but they're watching the food. I'm assuming he had a little basket.
More
there.
Than that, it's already, looks like anyway, it's been baked, the bread, right. And the fish are done.
And they're done.
That's why somebody, when you said fish fry, I said that before, and I had somebody after I spoke one time, they said, well, he couldn't have fried it. I was like, No, wait a minute here. You're going to make an argument where I said he fried the fish because he only had two, and he multiplied it to thousands. And now you're saying, well, it couldn't have been fried. Well, again, I think it could have been.
I think it could have
been. If you're getting it from thin air, why not just go ahead and fry it in some peanut oil?
Yeah.
Just go ahead.
You're letting that stop you from appreciating the story?
What they're going to say is, Thomas Jefferson, by the way, my old...
No matter what happens, we're going to get
to Thomas Jefferson. My old hero in certain matters, old Thomas, he couldn't buy this. He looked at what Jesus said and the way he lived, and he said, that I can't argue with. Yeah. I'm a Christian in the sense I hold to what he said a man ought to be like. Right. He was looking at the model of Jesus' life. He said, but when it came to the loaves and the fishes and the resurrection of the dead, Jefferson said, nope.
Yeah.
No. He never said that, but I just read his writings.
Right.
When he got to the resurrection, he stopped right there. He also never said anything about the loaves and the fishes.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is, you know, they don't mind saying matter can't be created nor destroyed. They don't mind saying before there was a cosmos, where did it come from? Where did all that matter come from? What was there before the cosmos came into existence? And they say, the atheists and the agnostics and the unbelievers, there was nothing there. Mm-hmm. They don't mind then saying, well, nothing
came made from something.
Right? Nothing. And all of a sudden, it makes the cosmos start there. Well, if nothing made the cosmos, why would they have a problem with the one who said, no, I made the cosmos. Mm. Therefore, the loaves and the fishes is a no-brainer. This is easy. If you can make a cosmos, baking some baked bread, and just it's just coming out of the atomic makeup of things, it just, if you control the atoms, you can do anything. That's when it exactly comes
right
to.
No, when I was in.
Hang on, let's take a break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
When I was in biology in 11th grade, the question was, whatever the question was, about can matter be created or destroyed, and I was like, yes, God does it all the time.
That's right.
Bomp, wrong.
Yep.
Because I went up there and said, hey, I believe this. She's like, well, that was not the right answer. And I said, well, mark it wrong then. Give me an F.
Which he did.
I'm still bitter about it.
Yeah.
Which you've already said you weren't much of a student anyway. So here was my point. So they recognize him in the moment with the full belly. And I think, and again, I'm taking a little license here, but I think they're thinking about the possibilities of what this would look like. Here you got a guy
You got all the fish. You have all the fish.
I mean, the guy can just feed anybody.
Oh, yeah.
So you talk about an army. You know, people are always worried, how do you feed an army? If you're gonna, and they're thinking, well, we got the guy that can
feed. Miss K figured out a long time ago. So if you feed them, they will come.
So yesterday, I told the story, and that is like maybe, I don't know how long it's going to be. It's probably 40.
I remember it. Like
35,
yesterday.
Me too. And so Dad was, we had just gotten back to WFR, our church. And so Dad had a class. He, and Stevenson, by the way, texted me during my sermon. So when I get through, I go over there, look at my phone, and Stevenson's watching, I guess, from Colorado.
Which Stevenson was our first cameraman.
Yeah.
For
the first probably five Duckman videos.
For Duckman videos, which is funny because what did he sell insurance?
He's the father.
Yeah, insurance.
And he's the father of Dan.
And he's Dan's dad.
Phil went up there and was like, I think you'd be a good guy to film, you know, our videos because you're steady 80s, is what you called him. And he's like, Phil, I sell insurance.
He worked for State Farm.
Now I was like, no, I'm telling you, you got the right, you know.
And so. Obviously he was. So Stevenson, by the way, I'll just throw this in. So he gave me a little update. He said that DeLucchi, you took over DeLucchi's class. I never knew that. Don DeLucchi, one of mine and Jace's instructors in school, was teaching at WFR. And then he wasn't after that. And Stevenson was his assistant. And so Stevenson said, you know, I need to get old Rob up here to – teach this class because you were still, I mean, you were only been a Christian 6 or 7 years at this point. Mm-hmm. And so that's how you started teaching that class. But anyway, it was about 75 people in the class. It was very popular. I remember it and people loved coming to it and you were teaching. And so you said, well, look, let's have a class fish fry down at my house. I'll provide the fish and y'all come eat some fish. And so you're looking at your 75 member class and thinking that's who's going to come to fish.
I fish for a living, no problem.
So I remember days like you, like yesterday. So we're getting ready for it and you've caught the fish, we've helped clean them and we're getting ready to fry everything up and the car started coming.
Yeah.
And they kept coming.
And started stacking up.
And then we couldn't even park everybody.
Couldn't see the end of them.
Yeah. I remember thinking, there's nowhere else to park because you're surrounded by water. I was like,
so Dad's looking at us, and he's looking at all the people because they're just streaming in. So this is just like this moment. Yeah, and they're
that class is swelling.
So a class of 75 turned into about 250 people. And so Dad looks at us and says, like, boys, go hit the nets. I hope there's some fish out there. And so Jason and I take off. You know, you're starting the process. We got to go catch a bunch more fish, clean them, and like you're
I
cooking.
Dressed enough for 75, but I didn't have enough dressed for 250.
That's right. And so Jason and I are like, we're like a factory. We're cleaning fish and getting it to you. You keep frying. People keep eating. We had this miracle without the miracle. I mean, yeah. We were the miracle.
The miracle was blood, sweat, and tears.
The fish were in the net. So,
well, that's true.
And it was taking money because This is what we would have sold.
That's right. And, so, but look, what I love about Dad is, number one, you never thought twice. You thought, we got people here. We're going to feed them, which, by the way, is just what Jesus thought, by the way. Remember he said he looked on the crowd in Mark 6, and the disciples are saying, send them on.
I would have never walked out in the yard and said, let me tell you folks something. I don't know where you come from. I recognize you as members of the church up there. But, you know, this is for my class. Right. We don't have enough fish. I would have done
it. You never did it. You responded.
Suck it up and go get some more fish.
Read this, the audience, read this in the Mark 6 context, because Mark gives a little different flavor. But you don't get it in John, but in Mark, he says, Jesus looked down. The disciples are saying, send them home. Like, send them to go get something to eat. And Jesus is like, no. And that's when he came up with the idea.
Miss K was like, what are you going to do?
That's right. You said, get some more meal.
Well, it shows you the basic human needs or weaknesses is they love free fish.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you say, come free fish fry down on the riverbank, they're coming.
That's right.
If you cook them, they're coming.
I've seen it many a time.
Well, and I talked about it in the context of the reason we knew that is because when Dad was first, came to Christ, he would have out our preacher and some other of our mentors, the guys that mentored all of us, and they never turned down a fish fry.
Well, of course not. You know why? This was Jesus' idea.
Exactly.
It's not like we came up with it.
That's right.
He started breaking some fish.
You eat Appaloosa's cat one time, the next time you get the chance, you'll come back for more.
Right. You're coming.
You're coming.
That's right.
And you following. And that's why, later he came up there and said, yeah, you're following me around. Not because you think I'm all that great. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. But you want some more of that fish and bread.
That's exactly right. He kind of gives them a little chastisement. Let's take our last break. So my point is, verse 15, this is where I got in the sermon, which I thought was kind of the most poignant thing about this, and this kind of brings it into the current thing with Dad.
It's a very obscure, unusual phrased passage.
It is, and it struck me. I'll admit, if I had just taught this in any other setting, I probably wouldn't have thought about how I illustrated with it. But obviously, this last week of these protests that led to riots, that have led to violence and everything our country is going through. So look at verse 15. Jesus, so remember they said, he's the prophet, he's him. Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to the mountain. So he's knowing what their intent is, and it was interesting because, and this is what took me into the current climate, is he knew they were going to turn this into a mob scene real quick. We went from a fun fish fry and some teaching to they've realized that, you know what, we can overthrow, we can get rid of Rome.
Free stuff.
Just think about that statement. We're going to take Jesus,
this is a good point,
and make him a king by force.
He's the Messiah, the prophet.
Knowing all the grub you want, and it's all free. I've heard that line somewhere
before. I just want to say this one statement. You can't make Jesus do anything.
That's right.
And nor should you try.
That's right.
But the more Al brought up this point, the more I got to thinking, you know, in small ways and in big ways, in the religious world and in the non-religious world, that's the way humans operate.
That's right.
We try to take the Godhead or any aspect of it and just force it to fit whatever we want to happen. You say, well, why would they do that? Why would he know that they wanted that? Because they want to dictate policy. You're our king, and this is what you're going to do.
That's right.
Yep. Here's what we want to do. We want to first take over Rome. We want some more of this fish.
on our schedule.
This is what – there's meetings.
They were looking around saying there's 5,000 of us. He didn't go to town, but he's feeding all of us. We with him.
That's right.
He said
– except on our terms, not on his terms.
It's the old thing. It just keeps giving.
So here's what's interesting, Jason. I don't even think I got to this on the – I'm looking at my notes. Look at all the scratches. So I don't even think I got to this on my sermon. But it struck me when Jesus had this awareness moment that what the crowd was thinking they were going to do, and he knew it, so he just kind of backs away, does his little Jesus Jedi trick. What Satan tried the same thing with him when he tempted him. Remember when he took him?
Yep.
Jesus had the 40-day fast. Satan shows up. He told him, make bread.
This is what I'll give you. Make bread.
Jump off the temple. And when he told him to jump off the temple, he quoted scripture. Here's Satan quoting scripture, which I thought was interesting. And then the third one, he took him up on a mountain. And I don't know if this is in their mind or they translate. I don't know how it all happened. But somehow they're up on a mountain looking. He said, look at this. He's looking at the whole, you know, all these people. Satan's like, these are mine. But if you'll bow the knee to me, we can do this together. And Jesus said, I serve the Lord God only. In other words, I'll never bow the knee to you. And so what struck me about the sermon, and I made the point, is this last week we've seen a lot of this kneeling concept that we're for this movement or whatever.
At a protest.
You know. And then even trying to force people to kneel. And there was a couple of days ago, there was a black state trooper in Georgia. And they're trying to, you know, control the crowd. And they're starting on him about trying to make him kneel before the crowd for the cause. And he said it, what I said in my sermon. He looked at them, and the only thing he said through the he's just mostly looking at them. They're yelling at him, calling him names. He said, I bow the knee to one. That's what that state trooper said. And I thought that was kind of the point of my sermon, is that if we bow our knee to Jesus, we don't have to get into these causes and all this. I don't bow my knee to any man, the president of the United States, anybody. I bow my knee
to
Jesus.
Or for any reason.
Any cause, any ideology.
Because a lot of people say that it's a sign of protest, but – when you think about what we do to Jesus, which comes back to this same thing, it's hard sometimes to see victory through bowing the knee or surrendering. But that's the way, that's the path to victory. Because you think about this, who are we to dictate anything to God or Jesus about anything?
Yeah.
We don't take him by force. We don't demand things. We don't come up with a plan and say, God, do this. This is our plans. I mean, it's the complete opposite. We bow the knee to Jesus and we say, use us.
If
however you see fit.
If somehow we would try to go forward, either in our faith or even in our country, with the idea that we're going to make demands that you have to do this, think about where that runs itself out and some of the crazy stuff that's happening. I mean, you've got now a city saying, you know what, we're just going to get rid of the police force.
Ooh.
Let me just tell you something. that's going to be a bad idea. Oh. I'm going to go on record as saying that's not going to work.
You're not going to believe how fast they're going to get off
it's
of that.
It's going to be terrible. So, but it, again, it's that idea. And this struck me as that. And I guess, Jason, I'd never thought about it before because you said it early on the last time we talked about this. The evil one is the architect. When you see this much damage to people and division, because John 10 said he came to steal, kill, and destroy. And I would add to that divide.
But it's not just in the unbelieving world. I'm putting that in quotation marks.
That's right.
It, you know, because when it says the evil one, when Paul said in Corinthians where he said the, you know, Satan masquerades as an angel of light. It's not like when you said he quoted verses.
He did.
It's not as clear cut as you think. Oh, all you know, it's obvious these people who are un-American and don't love humans and look at this opportunity as, you know, an opportunity to create chaos. Right. It's kind of obvious to see that. You're right. Thinking, well, this is not – that's not right. What's harder is what we're talking about on, you know, how do you protest something? And that's why I started saying you protest things by surrendering to Jesus – and introducing him to other people. That's your answer. That's your protest against injustice.
Yeah.
I mean, we hate injustice just as much
Absolutely.
As any other people.
It makes me sick.
It makes me nauseous when people make a decision at the color of someone's skin. I mean, that is nauseating to me because I'm like, we're all different.
That's right.
Whether, you know, we're not really – me and you are not exactly the same color. I mean, that's just so silly to me.
And whatever the racist skin color is, I'm just as disgusted. If it's a white guy that's racist towards somebody else, that disgusts me just as much as it does any other form of racism.
But you got to remember, we draw so much attention to it. I'm like, I would love to live in a society where we don't notice that anymore.
Yeah, it'd be great.
But it's like on both sides of the issue, everyone wants to be noticed. Right. You know, on what color we are and the things that happen. That's why I'm saying Jesus is where we drop down to our knees. And you say, why? Because he controls the molecular structure of all things. And everything he represents, like you quoted on Thomas Jefferson, couldn't get around, is right.
Yep.
Is true. He always valued people, every person.
Right. So I'll close with this. Man, that seemed to go by fast. Galatians 3, 26 through 29. This is how I close my sermon. So in Christ Jesus, you are all, that's all lives, and they do matter, children of God through faith. For all lives, all of you were baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. That's what we're talking about, Jess. What we see is Christ. There is neither Jew nor Gentile.
Which, think about that statement. That included all the races right there.
Everybody. There's neither slave nor free.
Which is all kind of classes of, it's not like what we think a modern day slavery, but this is all classes of people.
Nor is there male or female. No this gender stuff. All one. For you are all one in Christ Jesus. If you belong to Christ, then you're Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise.
I mean, you want to find true equality? You'll find it in Jesus.
That's
Amen. That's a good statement to end on.
So we're so glad you guys were with us today. You can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or YouTube or Facebook, and be sure and rate us on iTunes so that other people can know about the podcast.